Rube, the schedule comes out soon. I love when we hit these benchmarks in the season. We just know things are moving along here.
Yeah, you ever see that movie with Steve Martin? What's it called? The Jerk? You ever see?
I don't
really make movie references.
What are the chances of that? You're making a movie reference and I've never seen it.
I know Ben's seen it, but Steve Martin, I think it's The Jerk. Yeah, it's The Jerk. You've probably seen the clip. The new phone books are out. He freaks out because they got their new phone book. Back when there were phone books, they got delivered to your like front door once a year, every couple of years. And he just like freaks out because the new phone books are here. That's like me on schedule day when the schedule comes out. And I think there's like a symbolism in it because that's the day, to me, you're going from last year to next year. Because now that the season takes shape, you know the opener, you know the closer, you know when you're getting the best games. I enjoy schedule day. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And then we can go win, loss. We can play the game and see how wrong we are. But we want to mention, this is the Eagle Eye Podcast, by the way, with Ruben Frank. I'm Dave Zangaro. We will have a podcast on Wednesday night. Normally we record on Thursdays, but we want to react to the new schedule and we'll have that game. We'll go through the ups and downs of whatever the schedule looks like. We'll see if the Eagles play in London. There's a chance. The Falcons, of course, have the game there, and the Eagles are one of the possible opponents. So we'll break all that down on Wednesday. For today, we have quite a bit to get to. Kerryon Johnson, it's our first time getting together since the Eagles claimed him off waivers. We're going to talk about what that means for him, for the Eagles, for the running back room in general. We have some mailbag questions to get to that we have leftovers from last week. And then we're going to rank the position groups. I think we teased it last time and the questions got too long, so we never got to it. But we have that. Hopefully we'll get to that today. We also have Jacoby Stevens, Eagles sixth round pick, joining us shortly. That should be a really fun interview. But Rube, I want to start with Kerryon Johnson. Interesting. I mean, this is a former second round pick, really talented player. There's a reason the Lions cut him. But what do you make of this waiver claim? And do you think he's going to, A, make the team, B, be a significant contributor?
These are great questions. And he's a guy that could go either way. And you look at his rookie year, I think he broke Barry Sanders' club record for yards per carry by a rookie. So if you break a record by Barry Sanders, people notice that. He was really good. And then, halfway through his second year, he hurt his knee. He wasn't off to a great start. He didn't have a good year last year, and the numbers just haven't been there the last 2 years. They have drafted Swift, and they're pretty well set. Deuce Staley is their running backs coach, and so you're getting a guy that Deuce didn't want, basically. But he's got talent. It's just, to me, it's the knee. It's how healthy he is. And I looked this up. This is a real Rube stat, but back-to-back three seasons averaging 3.6 or less. I looked up everybody in the last 20 years that had back-to-back seasons averaging 3.6 or less. And only 4 of 28 guys ever had a good season after that. So generally the point is, and some really good players like Emmitt Smith and Jerome Bettis, Deshaun Foster, Jamal Lewis, Chester Taylor, Rashard Mendenhall, in every case, Doug Martin, in every case, with a couple exceptions, once you hit that spot in your career, you're not coming back. You're not bouncing back. And you see that with running backs. It's really hard to, because generally it means if you have that kind of production, you're either on a really bad team where you have a chance to kind of be a good player again, or healthy or medically health-wise, you're not the same guy. You're just not the same running back. And in almost every case, once the guy had 2 years like that, he never recovered. So the exceptions are Darren McFadden, Doug Martin. There's a couple of them. I mean, Eddie George is a guy that once he hit that level, he never came back. So the odds are against him. That's a long-winded way of saying the odds are against him ever regaining his rookie form. But it is possible he's going to have, I don't know what role they'll find for him if he does make the team. I still think he's a long shot to make the team, Dave. I do, because, Gainwell is here. Boston Scott's here, who's been very productive in the role they've given him the last couple of years. Jordan Howard, I don't know what to make of him, but he's a former Pro Bowler and a two-time 1,000-yard rusher, and obviously Miles is here. So, and they got some young kids too. They seem to like Holyfield, but we'll see. I think if he can be close to what he was as a rookie, then you just it's a no lose situation. There's no guaranteed money or anything. It's you bring him in as a waiver claim, and if he makes the team, that's great. If he doesn't, you don't lose anything. So from that standpoint, it's a terrific move.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about him that I think is important to note, he's still just 23, whereas a lot of those players you were mentioning had, obviously, body parts breakdown, that happens, but a lot of those guys had a bunch of wear and tear from multiple seasons. This guy hasn't had that. I know that the knees are an issue, a clear issue. I mean, he's wearing, I know the last year in Detroit, he was like, yeah, the knee brace is, and you never want to hear that from running backs. Like, the knee brace is a part of me is basically what he said. That's scary, but he's still just 23. So I think there's maybe a little bit better chance that he's able to build up.
And there's also some young guys on the list too that I didn't mention because they're not as well known, but you're right. I mean, out of all those guys, you certainly give him a chance just because of the, you know, a guy that age is going to recover faster, is going to or recover better. And it's not a chronic thing, you wouldn't think at that age. Guys like, I don't know, I mean, Jay Ajayi was pretty much washed up at 25, you know. So I mean, knees for running backs are really important. I like the move just because there's nothing to lose and maybe you get something. And it's really interesting what they're doing at running back. I mean, Doug Peterson didn't care. I mean, I got Miles, I'm good. The running back position is, they drafted one, they re-signed Jordan Howard and they acquired this guy in waivers. So they're adding some depth. They still have guys like Killens and Elijah Holyfield. And, who I mentioned, there's another young guy who I don't remember, but I'm sure you do. But you're just going to stare at me and not say his name.
Is there another young guy?
Maybe there's not. Maybe that's it. But anyway, I think it's a good group of backs. I think Gainwell's, the really, he's kind of the wild card because he could be anywhere from not making a team, which is a long shot, but fifth round pick, you're not a lock, to being a really big part of the offense. We just don't know until we see him and what kind of pro he is and how he picks up blitzes and catches the ball. But it's an interesting group. And I think it's important to get Miles some help because, you know, he's not a guy, we've seen him get hurt. He's not a guy that can really be that, at least ideally be that bell cow 20 carry a game guy. So got some depth and some interesting pieces to support him.
Yeah, you look at Howard and Kerryon Johnson, and it's almost like put those guys out in training camp. Whichever one the battery isn't all the way down on, keep him, right? I mean, whichever guy has something left, because they're both talented at a certain point. Jordan Howard had a higher peak, obviously. He was a Pro Bowler, but Kerryon Johnson had, I mean, a really good rookie season. So Jordan Howard's a little older, but I think whichever one of those guys is better is going to make the team. And maybe that's simplifying it too much. And maybe they don't even keep four. There's a chance they can keep three, have someone on the practice squad because there's still elevations this year. They can play that game with the roster like they did last year. It won't be as easy because you probably won't have COVID list stuff, but you still have elevations from the practice squad. So they can play that game if they want. They can keep three running backs. But I look at it like whichever one of these two guys you think, all right, he looks better, I think there's something there, he can help us, you keep. And the one thing with Johnson that I really like, he's really good in pass protection. So if you get into these third down situations and you don't feel comfortable having Kenny Gainwell in the field yet, or you'd rather have someone who can protect Jalen Hurts, at least you know Johnson can do that. If he doesn't do anything else, he's one of the better pass protecting running backs in the league. And that means something. And that's something that gets overlooked a lot.
Yeah, no question about it. Assuming he's healthy enough to do it. I mean, that's something you need your knees for and your legs for as well. I'm really curious to see him. He's obviously Detroit, went in another direction and they saw him for 2 years, but sometimes guys just need a new start. And I'm really curious about all these backs. I'm curious to see Gainwell. I'm curious to see Jordan Howard and to see if he's got anything left. Because like you said last time, I mean, he he's only a year removed from a really good first half of the 19 season. And he didn't even have that many carries in Miami. It's tough to say he's washed up based on, what do you have, like 20, 23 carries or something, and then a handful here. So he's well-rested, and we'll see. But it's a potentially, I think, an upgraded running back room with versatile guys. Jordan Howard's not much of a receiver, but the other guys are, certainly. I think that's going to be something that is big in this offense that Nick Sirianni wants, is running backs that can catch the ball. Miles did it his rookie year, didn't really do it so much last year. So
that's another thing. I wonder how they view Miles as a receiver. If they look at that rookie year, like, I don't think he can get back to that level. He's probably somewhere in between, but I don't think they're necessarily relying on him to be that pass catcher that he was his first year.
Yeah, he was really good. And they got some great matchups with him, with linebackers on him. But he made some really good catches. I mean, that one in the back of the end zone was crazy.
But it's weird because he wasn't making typical, like, running back catch. It wasn't like a ton of screens. It was like run a wheel route 30 yards downfield and beat a linebacker. Like, it was kind of a weird way to put together a big receiving year for a running back, whereas normally you think about screen passes, maybe even lining them up in the slot. They didn't do that with Miles. It was just everything else broke down. He'd be downfield catching balls.
Yeah, it was. I think they took a lot of people by surprise. And I mean, he had 500 receiving yards or something. It was crazy. But I think he's pretty good. I think he's a pretty good receiver, but it's a matter of, and I think they're going to have more weapons on offense. So they'll be able to do more things. And I think there'll be some good matchups with the running backs, in coverage. So I think ideally they'd love to see him recapture that receiving form. He just had some bunch of drops last year. We have like 6 drops.
And I think Carson were never on the same.
Exactly. And I also think,
I apologize.
I know, back to zero.
Yeah.
When I was on WIP the other night and I mentioned him, and a caller was like, back to zero, Rube, which I really appreciate that. But I also think when you're not healthy, and he was never really, he was banged up and most of the year, I think when you're not healthy, that aspect of your game is going to go. You're just not comfortable, and you're not out there doing the things you're capable of doing. And I think that might account for some of the drops, but we'll see. It's a big year for Miles because he's really good, but can he be great? Will he be great? Will he be a Pro Bowl running back? Will he be an elite running back? The talent's there, but I just don't know. I think he's really good, and it'll be interesting to see if he can take that next step in year 3.
Yeah, health is a big part of that. He needs to be healthy to utilize all those tools he has, because he is talented. I think anyone questions his talent. It's just, can he stay healthy? Can he fit in the offense? And we'll see. The one thing that struck me about them claiming Johnson was that, when's the last time the Eagles had this good of a waiver claim spot? It's weird to think, like, whenever there's a team who drops someone, and they might utilize this at final cuts, but they can utilize it throughout – the next few months too. If a good player, like
week 6, I think it is.
Yeah, then it shuffles based on your record. But they have the 6th spot. So if there are good players who get released, normally it's like, they'll never get to whatever spot the Eagles are in anyway. At number 6, they have a shot to land some of these guys. So when players are cut now, you should pay a little bit more attention. It doesn't mean they're going to start bringing in everyone, but if a player gets released who would fit what they do, there's a chance they could end up with that player.
And basically what Dave is saying is that waiver claim order is based on, it's the same as draft order, inverse of your record from the previous year. I think they're tied with the Bengals. I think they alternate with the Bengals on claims with 5 and 6. I think it's the same as a draft where you alternate picks. But basically, as the 6th worst team, you have 6 priority. So if 10 teams make a waiver claim, whoever has the worst record the previous year gets that player. And that's basically it. And then week 6, the waiver claim priority reverts to the current year's record. I think they'll still have pretty good waiver claim priority at that point, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But it's a device to, to give the worst teams the best chance to improve. It's for parity. And that's what the league's all about, because that drives TV ratings. The more teams have a chance to be good, the higher the ratings are. So it all kind of goes together. But I'm interested to see Carrion. Again, he's one of those guys, it could go either way. We could see him getting 6 or 8 touches a game, or we could see him not making the team or on the practice squad or not playing. So we just don't know. And I don't think they know either. We'll see.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Joining us now on the Eagle Eye podcast, one of the newest Eagles, Jacoby Stevens. Jacoby, how are you?
I'm fine. How about you?
We're doing well. So it's been a little over a week now since you got drafted. What was that moment like for you, first off? And then what's the last week and change been, knowing that you're now an NFL player?
Right. So, I mean, getting drafted and, hearing my name called during, the draft was a big deal. I mean, it's a dream come true. And being able to be this, like I said, just hear my name called. I mean, every kid grows up wanting to be drafted. And that's one of the things that I said I was going to do since I was young. In fact, I bet my grandma that I was going to get drafted. So now she has to hold her end of the bet up. She knows what that is, but
come on, you got to give it up. You got to tell us what the bet was.
the bet was, I may have been 5 or 6 years old. The bet was that if, I made it to the NFL, she has to get a tattoo of the team logos that drafted me on her arm. So now she has to get an eagle tattoo on her shoulder. I told her she had to do it, but she said she's going to hold up to it. So it's going to be interesting. But
I'm picturing grandma like watching your success at LSU, like, all right, but like slow down a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think the closer we got to, this right here, the more and more she was like, I'm really about to have to get a tattoo. So
she's probably hoping you'd be an undrafted free agent.
She got it. Say it again.
She's out there hoping you'd be an undrafted free agent.
Right. So other than that, like I said, it's a dream come true. And it's just transitioning, it's at the end of the day, after that day, it's a job. So it's getting ready for, right now we have rookie mini camp starting this weekend. So it's getting ready for that, learning the playbook, making sure my body is healthy and ready to go. Because when we start up, next weekend, it's we may get like a couple of weeks off in June and July, and then we're headed for off season into the season. So that's one of the things that I've been just transitioning to, is just learning the playbook and making sure my body is ready to for that.
How prepared do you feel for what you're about to face? You played at the highest level in college. But NFL is a different animal. How prepared mentally and physically are you for what's about to come?
Yeah, I think that I'm very prepared for the NFL level. I played in the SEC. I played in the SEC West, and literally, in this draft class, I want to say the SEC broke the record on all the people that got drafted. So, I mean, when you look at multiple, you know, when you look at rosters, you know, it's a SEC driven roster. So, I mean, I played against NFL talent for my 4 years at LSU. So that you know, that makes me have to study like an NFL player, prepare like an NFL player. And like I said, this, you know, through and through for those 4 years, it was an opportunity to prepare myself for this moment right here. I mean, that's why we all go to college, prepare our month, you know, for those college experiences, but to prepare ourselves to be ready for the NFL level. So, like I said, I think I had a good teaching tool at LSU, and just take the things that I've learned there, take the things that I've learned, you know, even in high school, and apply them and in this opportunity here.
Have you had a chance to, I mean, obviously in the pre-draft process, you're talking to coaches and scouts, a bunch of people. Do you remember what your communication was like with the Eagles, who you talked to, and what you think about now getting a chance to play for them?
Yeah, so I you know, I talked with Coach Nick, the linebackers coach, and, you know, really and truly, what we did, we just went over install, and we just went over just kind of some of this, the basic, like a basic for a basic call that they had, just to see my recall, just to see, oh, how can I pick up certain things, you know, just my level of IQ of football. And, you know, getting off that Zoom meeting, you know, I think I left him very impressed. It was actually one of my later Zoom meetings in the process. So it's pretty cool to get drafted by them, because, you know, our relationship was kind of really fresh. It was new. I mean, you know, they probably did a lot of background work on me that I didn't even know of. But for me and Coach Nick to talk, and then I want to say a week and a half later, you know, I get a phone call from Mr. Howie, and, you know, I get drafted by the Eagles. So now it's time to go down there and get to work. So it was a pretty cool experience.
I got to ask you about coming into LSU as a freshman and the talent level. I mean, you get there, I'm thinking Darius Geis is there, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is there, Justin Jefferson, who's not even playing yet. You're a wide receiver with him. You're in the wide receiving room with him. DJ Chark is there. He was a second round pick, really good player. I mean, the talent level is crazy. And you played at a high level in high school, but what was that like, just kind of getting to college, and, you know, you're away from home for the first time, away from Murfreesboro, and all this talent? Did you feel like you fit in right away, or was that kind of a process?
Well, for me, talent wise, physically, and even mentally, I knew I fit in. I knew the things that I bring to the table in that situation. This God given ability, I knew I fit in. That's one thing I really wasn't worried about. Mentally, I don't think, for me, I wasn't ever nervous about me not being a student of the game, because I was a student of the game very early in the process of me going to LSU. The only thing that I think really and truly, when I look back in my career, the only thing that really held me back was this fine-tuning technique, fine-tuning footwork. I mean, in high school, I really never really focused on one position. I was kind of all over the place. You know, I played where it was needed in high school. So I was kind of, the fundamentals of playing one position, that's where I guess I wasn't as developed as everybody else. But in terms of just talent-wise and mentally, I think, you know, talking to Coach Moffitt and talking to some of the strength and conditioning coaches there, you know, I was one of the more explosive athletes that came through LSU.
So you get to the point where you're playing a bunch, and then you end up becoming a starter. And then last year you wear number 7. For people who aren't familiar with LSU, that's a big deal. Right. 7 and 18 are kind of the two important numbers there. Try to explain that to people, what the number 7 means, not just to you, but to the whole program.
I mean, I can start off with the program. I mean, it's easy to tell you what it means by the people who wore it. I mean, you have the Grant Delpit, you have Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, Leonard Fournette, DJ Chark. Those are the guys that wore 7. And if you don't know what 7 means to LSU off of those names, then you're not paying attention to football in general. But for me, you know, what number seven meant is it was just opportunity. You know, it was opportunity to do the same thing, to be a playmaker on the field, but also it was opportunity to wear a number that to somebody that I idolized today, and that was Patrick Peterson. You know, in middle school, you know, I really cherished looking at Patrick Peterson just play on the field, and then, you know, and how he carried himself off the field. So you know, Coach O gave me an opportunity to wear that number. You know, I jumped at it because it meant a lot for me, you know, to be able to wear that, you know, wear the number that I wore in high school and wore in middle school because of Patrick Peterson.
Do you know what you get to wear in the NFL yet?
I know, but they told me not to say, so it's a secret between me and the organization until they, you know, release it.
Are you happy with it? We'll go with that.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm happy to get a jersey. you know, the number stuff, you know, you can brand a number, you can make a number personable to you, but at the end of the day, you need to be happy that you have a job at this point.
Well, we'll see you out there on the field on Friday. We'll figure out what number you're wearing. You mentioned Grant Delpit. I wanted to ask you about him, if he's a guy. I guess he was a year ahead of you.
It was the same year. He just left early. So he left his junior year, and I left my senior year.
Okay. What was it like playing with him, and what did you learn from him and kind of just watching him and being around him all those couple of years?
Yeah. You know, playing with Grant was a cool experience because, like I said, I think, you know, he's a guy that you know, he's one of the best guys that I've seen that can track a football from the middle of the field. His range is ridiculous. And I think that he's somebody that, you know, recovering from his injury, he's somebody that's going to put a lot of people on notice. I think a lot of people forgot about him his rookie year, just maybe because he just couldn't play. But I think the Browns got themselves a big steal. I know he went in the second round, but I think the Browns got themselves a really good player.
We've talked about you and this idea of positionless football because the Eagles you're listening to is a linebacker. You obviously played safety in college, and it's there are lines, I guess, but they're kind of fluid, right? I mean, is that how you kind of view the role you're going to have here?
Yeah, I mean, I played safety at LSU, and you know, and really and truly, it was just a label because really and truly, from my understanding. You know, it's kind of the same thing in a sense. I'm playing multiple positions, you know, in certain situations, you know, there's going to be a lot of, like you said, a lot of like crossover in certain things. But at the end of the day, it's all about matchups, you know, and, you know, sometimes you have a linebacker one-on-one with a running back or, you know, how offenses work today. They try to get a receiver lined up one-on-one with a linebacker or vice versa. You know, you have a safety lined up with a running back. I mean, you know, all those positions is really and truly getting to the point where it's all about matchups in the passing game. Offensive coordinators are trying to figure out how can I get my best player on a player that's not normally in his position. So what the Eagles are doing is trying to find people that can play multiple positions. And they when they're put in that matchup position, they feel comfortable. So I've played man-to-man on running backs, I played man-to-man on tight ends, and sometimes even at LSU, I was put in a situation where I had to cover receivers for a couple of downs. So having that experience and having that versatility behind you, and you know, it really pays off. Like I said, I think that's where football is moving to. It's moving to basketball on turf. Like, you know, with basketball, you see with the 76ers where, you know, Ben Simmons usually would be a power forward, and in some cases a center, but he's a 6'10 point guard. So, you know, you have those situations, and I think that's where the NFL is moving to.
And they could clinch the number one seed. I just got to mention that tonight. So everyone's talking about the Bucks and the Nets, but Sixers lock up that number one seed tonight. It's interesting, though. You mentioned it's not just you, but you look at the whole Eagles draft on both sides of the ball. Devontae talked about he can play in the slot. He can play outside. Landon Dickerson played tackle, guard, and center at Alabama. Well, actually tackle at Florida State, but he's played all three spots. Really, everybody they drafted can play inside, outside, different positions. It seems like it's kind of a philosophical thing, you know, that they're kind of looking at players like you who can do a lot of different things, aren't easily labeled and are versatile, but not only that, are willing to do whatever is best for the team and play any role that's asked for them, which isn't always easy for a young guy, you know, to kind of, you know, put their own thing in the background and say, I'm just gonna, I think you said this when we talked to you after the draft, I just want to, wherever they want me to play, I'll be happy to play there, whatever helps me win.
Right. At the end of the day, like you hit it right on the head. You know, you ask anybody around, you know, ask my loved ones, I'm very competitive. And, you know, to do, you know, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to win. You know, win legally, but win. So, like I said, you know, if, you know, I doubt that I have to do this, but if they have to be, you know, they have me lined up as a three technique, trying to take on a guard in the center, being a guard, you know, the interior O-lineman, you know, I'll do it. You know, I don't know how successful I'll be, but I'll try. But like you said, at the end of the day, it's about putting yourself aside and doing what's best for the team. And, you know, once you get those type of players, I mean, you've seen it with the Buccaneers, with Leonard Fournette, you know, during the beginning of the year, middle of the year, he wasn't playing a lot. And, you know, most guys, they'll check out or they'll ask for a trade, become a distraction. And, you know, he was able to put himself aside. And when his number was called, he was basically one of the ones that carried them to the Super Bowl. So you always have those stories in every championship story. I mean, you know, us at LSU, you had so many people that had to put themselves to the side and sacrifice for the betterment of the team. Because, you know, not only did it fit the philosophy of what's going to go on, but it made us most successful. So I think, you know, in every championship run, you can find a story where somebody always put themselves, majority of the time, somebody always really sacrifices and put themselves above the, under, you know, put themselves aside for the team success.
Hey, Jacoby, I wanted to ask you about something you said in our first talk with you right after you got drafted. It was such a cool answer because someone asked you about Devontae and you mentioned about how precise his routes were, that he kind of disguises everything, which says a lot about him. And I like the answer so much. I asked Nick Sirianni about it, but he was kind of also impressed with you recognizing that. It kind of shows that I'm guessing film study is a pretty big part of what's led to success for you. Is that fair to say?
Oh yeah. Like I said, I think that, I'm a student of the game. There's a lot of people that love playing the game. That love playing on Sundays and Saturdays, but how you separate from people that's just good athletes or just, you know, okay players from the Tom Brady's and the great players, the Tyrann Mathieu's, is what you do between, you know, now in the NFL, what you do between Monday and Saturday, or, you know, whenever you play on Monday, was Tuesday to Sunday. It's what you do between those times, your preparation and being a student of the game. Because really and truly, everybody at this level didn't get there, you know, they didn't get there just because they knew somebody. You know, everybody has talent. I think the talent level is really the same. Of course, you have better athletes than others. I mean, that's just like kind of like in the SEC, but what separates you is your preparation. What separates you is being a student of the game and knowing football. Because in situations, you can get to a spot before, you can get to a spot before they can, because you know on film this is what they do, or you can show this thing because you know this is what makes what you know it makes Devontae run a certain route, and he's playing right into the coverage because this is what he does time and time again. So, you know, I'm just using that as an example, but, you know, that's what separates a lot of guys. You know, a lot of guys get into, you know, well, he's just super duper fast, or he's just, you know, a lot of people get with Tyrann Mathieu that, I love it because they just think that Tyrann just goes out there and just plays on Sundays. And, you know, he just plays on Sundays and he's just this great NFL player. And I tell him, like, do you not think Tyron studies, you know, the type of plays that he makes? You know, I'm getting chills talking about it. The type of plays that he makes, that's, you know, of course he's a great athlete, but that's 100% film work. And I guarantee you that he'll say that himself. So I think that's what younger guys need to understand, that film work is what separates you apart in any type of level of game.
I got to ask you, Jacoby, you obviously had really good coaches every step of the way at Oakland, at LSU. I'm sure as a youth football player, it's like we're talking to a coach right now. I mean, you obviously think that way. You think like a coach when it comes to preparation. And I know you haven't even started your NFL career yet, but is this something that down the line you would like to do, become a coach one day?
I mean, you know,
I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
Right. I mean, any opportunity I get after I'm playing, you know, I take it. You know, I, of course, I want to stay around the game. You know, people joke that I can be a commentator after my career and I can be a coach. So I'm just happy that I have some type of jobs already lined up after my career. So I'm just gonna take it and be happy with it. And you know, hopefully, you know, I have a long career. So down the road, you know, I can call those people on that.
Yeah, well, I want you to be a coach so you don't take my job.
Well, I'm not looking to take anybody's jobs in that sense. But like I said, I'm glad to have those opportunities.
Yeah, we'll let you get started with your playing career here first. And we wish you all the luck in the world. Good luck this weekend at rookie camp. And then after that, then you'll get the veterans here and then it'll become a lot of fun.
Right. Right. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Jacoby. We appreciate your time.
Thanks. All right. You too.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
That was a lot of fun. I really like that kid. He seems like you can tell why the Eagles like him.
Yeah, I mean, the kid's doing an interview with two guys. He doesn't even know, and he's getting chills just talking about. I mean, it's like, you got to love this kid. He's an interesting talent. I mean, if he came out after that championship season when LSU won the championship in 19, I mean, he's a higher pick, and he didn't have as good a year. They moved this, you know, he played a little out of position last year. LSU did not have a good year, and his draft stock suffered. But he's an interesting guy and has a chance to be a player. It's gonna be fun to watch him.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him about it, but if he hadn't seen it, it would have been weird and kind of awkward. But did you ever see that clip with Belichick talking with Ed Reed on that, like, the NFL Network's 100th special about the one play it was like a double bluff on the field, and Belichick called it like the most amazing play he's ever seen a free safety make, and Ed Reed like faked one way, so he's running and he knows that, I think it was Brady or Peyton, it was like one of these great quarterbacks, was throwing the other way if you looked him off. So Ed Reed like double bluffed, ran, and then just turned mid-play and sprinted to where he knew the football was going to go and picked him off. And Belichick's like, I don't even know how he did that. And it was all film study, but it's funny. People think that guys who get to the NFL know how to study film and are good at it and they care. It's not true. I mean, a lot of guys don't really get to that level until they get to the NFL. So they hear him talk about Tyrann Mathieu giving him chills is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I earned new respect early on in my career watching film with Seth Joyner at the vet down in the dungeon there for hours. I can't say he taught me how to watch film, but I certainly earned newfound respect for all these guys just for the level of detail, the diligence, and the patience and the attention that goes into it. It's not like sitting down and watching The Jerk with Steve Martin. It's a real art into itself. And it certainly sounds like Jacoby's got that part down already.
You getting royalties from The Jerk or something? Like every time you mention it, a 2-cent check shows up in the mail?
That's like my book, The 50 Greatest Plays in Eagles History. Like every 3 months, I get a check for like 42 cents, 58 cents, you know, 12 cents. So I'm saving them all up, and you know, we'll have a Eagle Eye podcast pizza party in about 50 years.
All right. Well, thank you to Jacoby. That was really cool. We wanted to get into some leftover.
I did not root for that kid, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of a long shot, 6th round pick. Position or number 224. And I think he's going to make the team, and we'll see. We'll see how he does. All right. So I wanted to get into some of these questions. Let me pull this up here. We left off with a question about the link and having fans back this season, which was a good way to leave last week. But this week, this one is from Brad Coe. I hope that's how you say your name. I'd like to see how he signed a veteran cornerback to play on the outside so Maddox can go back to the slot. I'd be surprised if our 4th rounder is good enough to start this year. That's Zach McPherson. How do you see Howie pursuing this role?
Yeah, we've talked about some of the names, and that list is getting shorter. Are you convinced he's going to sign a veteran? Because the names are going off the board, and he's not making a move. Could they?
I still think they're not done.
You would think.
He's hinted at it too much.
He has. I
mean, he spent all of draft weekend saying, well, we're not, you know, this isn't the final roster. There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah.
I don't think he's done. Whether it's a trade or free agency, I think they're going to add a corner.
I think what you said last week might come out to be true just about trading. And I just wonder if Ertz is going to be part of a deal that brings him a cornerback and if that's what he's working on. Because he brought up Darby. Mm-hmm. He brought up Darby on his own before the 2017 season. And that wasn't until August. That was during training camp. And all of a sudden, Jordan Matthews is gone and Ronald Darby is there. So the fact that Howie brought that up kind of tells you he's thinking trade. And he's right. I mean, there's 4 months to go till the season starts. So something's up. Something's definitely up, but it might not be a free agent. It might be a trade.
Maybe they want to see Zach McPherson. You know, maybe they want to just see how he looks in training camp. If he looks lost, then maybe they're like, oh, man. Or maybe he looks great, and they're like, maybe the pressure's not there to get one.
Man, I don't know. Rookie corners, that's a tough position. In this division, I would worry about – you know, you throw a guy to the Wolves like that, a 4th-round pick, I would really worry. I mean, even Lito and Sheldon didn't start as rookies. They started a couple games late in the year. But I would worry about a guy like Zach McPherson, just the long-term. If you throw a guy who's not ready out there, you can do some damage. So I'd almost rather have Michael Jacquet out there and say, all right, go – commit a bunch of DPIs and you're not really worried about his, you know, I mean, he's been in the league. You're not worried about his, you know, how he reacts to it. He's, you know, but because you don't have anything invested in him like McPherson. So, but I don't think it's going to come to that. And I still think they would start Avante outside ahead of, if it comes to that, you just start him outside, re-sign Cravon and put him in the slot. So they both.
Yeah, I mean that, and that would be probably a better situation. But even if Avante might start and then slide inside on nickel downs too.
Yeah,
I could see something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that worries me about, and both of those guys, really, Avanti and Cravon, they both have shown flashes at times of being decent, but neither one can stay on the field. And that's a problem too. Now, you know, they get hurt, and now you're bringing in the Jamison Houstons and, you know, Michael Jacquettes and Kayvon Seymours and of the world, and you get into trouble. So but I do think there'll be reinforcements coming in to answer the question in what form. We just don't know yet.
Yeah. If you had to guess, trade or free agent, which way would you lean?
I think trade, because I think it was a free agent, it would have happened by now.
You might be right. I mean, free agent is, you know, statistically more common, but Howie trades. I mean, Howie's a trader. He's always been a trader.
How are you spelling that?
All right. Next question is from Robert B. 60, a bunch of numbers. What happens as far as the cap on June 1st, and when does training camp begin? All right, the first question we'll get to in a second. When does camp begin? We don't know the date yet. It's normally late July, early August.
10 days before the first preseason game, usually.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens with the preseason this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm one of the few people that – I think you're with me on this. I actually enjoy the preseason games because it's your chance to see so many of these young guys. I would never – I don't think it's right that they make people pay for them, but like their regular games. But as a fan of the game, I enjoy watching these young guys. You know, it might be our only chance to see a lot. It will be our only chance to see a lot of these guys. So I enjoy them. I'm looking forward to them. I'm not going to say I missed them last year, but I do enjoy preseason games.
One of my favorite stories every year is, and I obviously didn't get to do it last year, but before the first preseason game, I go around to the veterans and ask which of their young teammates they're looking forward to seeing in a game for the first time. And that's always fun. A lot of times you learn. Like, you learn which guys behind the scenes are putting in the most work that their teammates are like, oh, I want to see this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always a good story. So is ask a bunch of older veterans what they remember about their very first preseason game. That's always a good one.
Yeah, and Kelsey's like, all right, this is like the 14th year you've asked me about this.
He remembers too. He's like, Rube, you asked me that in 2017, 2018, and 2020.
June 1st. I don't want to get too inside baseball here, but basically it allows you to spread money to the following season. So, you know, if you had a big cap hit that the team would have to swallow in 2021, after June 1st, you can spread that bonus money to the next season. You can split it, basically. So for a team and like the Eagles, it would help in a case with, you know, Zach Ertz, they would save a lot more cap space this year if they could then spread some of that out to next year if they wait until after June 1st to trade him. I don't know if it's a reason that they're waiting, but it would give them some added cap relief this year. And you're only allowed to designate two moves as post June 1st moves and do them before. And the Eagles have already done that when they cut Malik Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey. Now they have to carry that full cap hit through to June 1st. But then once June 1st comes, they're going to get an extra chunk of change savings there. A pretty good savings. I think $2 million each get removed at that point. So that's basically the way it works. It just allows you to spread cap money from 1 year to 2 years.
Well said.
Should I go more? But basically, so you have these bonuses.
Oh, here we go.
You have like bonuses on a contract. So if you have a 5-year contract and there's a $5 million signing bonus, there's $1 million per year. So if you cut a guy, they would not escalate. They would, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Amortized. They would jump up. They would end up counting this year.
Accelerate.
Accelerate. They would accelerate. Thank you. They would accelerate. They'd count this year. The June 1st thing allows you to spread it some the next year.
But it's also something you have to juggle because you don't want to get too bogged down with, you don't want to move too much of this stuff into the future either.
Yeah, but the future looks bright, especially right now when in a year where the cap is down because of a loss of revenue.
Right.
Next year is probably going to be the biggest salary cap jump we've seen maybe ever.
Well, from this year, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, sure, it has to be.
Yeah, that's why you do it. Next one. Will Nick Sirianni ever run out of two-point conversion plays? In parentheses, will he be as aggressive as Doug Peterson going for two and on fourth down?
That's an interesting question. We don't really know what kind of play caller Nick is going to be. He didn't call plays in Indy, and we're kind of, you know, looking at what Frank always did. And
Frank's aggressive.
I think a lot of Doug's aggressiveness came from Frank. I think Doug, it's one thing to be aggressive. You have to be aggressive at the right times in the right situations. And I think when Frank was gone, Doug's judgment on some of those things got a little skewed. But I expect Nick to be like, I mean, he seems like a really aggressive guy. He seems like a guy that does listen to analytics and pays attention to that and considers it, not the only factor, but I expect him to be similar to Doug when it comes to taking those risks, those calculated risks, and doing that kind of aggressive stuff. I think he will.
Yeah, I think you hit on a big point there, was the analytics, because as long as Jeffrey's the owner, the head coach better care about analytics. That's the world he wants his head coach in. And a lot of the things that Doug did that we perceived as aggressive weren't. I mean, they were in traditional sense of conventional knowledge, but based on the analytics the Eagles have, they should go for it in those situations. So he was kind of following what that department says and what the numbers bear out. And my argument against that sometimes is that would the numbers still say that if teams were doing it at that rate? Because whatever, but you start getting into too deep of a conversation there. But a lot of that wasn't just Doug saying, I got a feeling about this, I want to go for it on two, I'm going to go for two here. A lot of that was, the numbers say you should go for two here, Doug. And Doug was like, all right, I'll go for two. And that's kind of how it works. And I think if Nick Sirianni's smart, he's going to listen to the analytics. That's how you keep your job. You listen to the analytics department here.
Yeah, I also think there's got to be room for your gut instinct, you know, for the Charlie Manuel way of baseball. Just, you know, I don't like the way he's swinging the bat. I'm just going to have him bunt. there's room for that too. And I think that's a really tricky thing, is balancing your instincts with what the analytics people are telling you here. I think Doug did a masterful job of that in 17 of balancing that. And there were times where he went against the analytics, and I can't imagine any analytics said, you know, throw to the backup quarterback with your undrafted tight end. But, you know, on fourth down just before halftime of a Super Bowl. But I think, you know, that's the trick, is balancing those two things in a way that makes sense.
Well, that's the thing. There are so many variables that can't be accounted for when you're talking about analytics. So if the numbers say to go for it on fourth down here, you watched an Eagles offense last year. Like, do the numbers say for this offense, like
right.
this offense with Suo Peta and Nate Herbig and Matt Brett Pryor Toth. Out there, Brett Toth. I mean, do the analytics say for this team? Because I think the analytics say like a normal team, not this shell of a team. So I think you have to, you're right. The feel matters. And it's like, is the offense good enough to get this done right now? And sometimes it wasn't.
Yeah. And you also have, the coach has, and this goes back to the first part of his question, which is sarcastic, but you have to have fourth down plays or whatever, you know, or two-point conversion plays. You have to have the plays. I mean, because all the analytics is a distillation of the averages of those situations. So if you don't have a good play, it doesn't mean, like, if there's an 80% chance it's going to work, but you don't have a good play for it, it's not going to work 4 out of 5 times. It's just not going to work. So, that's definitely a factor too. But I would expect Nick to be very prepared for those situations.
Okay, a couple more questions here. This one is from Apple. I thought it was Apple Josh, but it's Apple JOOSH. So Apple Juice, like apple juice?
Yeah.
Okay, Apple Juice. Okay. If Watson, Deshaun Watson, gets his legal issues cleared within the next couple months, do you think it's possible Howie makes a trade for him without giving Hurts a season to prove himself? In parentheses, Apple Juice says, I don't want this to happen, by the way.
With Howie, I would say yes. I would say anything's possible. I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to happen. I think his legal problems are too entangled or too, you know, I don't think they're going to get resolved in time. And I'm not making any comment about whether, you know, about his, you know, guilt or not. I just don't know. I'm not familiar enough with the case, but I don't think this whole thing can be resolved in time for him to go to another team this year. We'll see. But with Howie, like you said earlier, anything's possible. Anything is, he will explore everything. Whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Joe Montana, Tom Brady.
I don't know if Joe has another one left in him.
Bobby Hoying. I mean, he will explore everything. And that's one thing you know about him. He won't leave any stone unturned, and doesn't mean he's going to make the right decision, but he'll explore everything. So for most people, I would say no, but for Howie, I would say don't ever rule anything out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the Watson situation is going to be resolved to the point where he can get traded this offseason. Now, next offseason, we'll see. And our buddy Peter King put together like his own odds, and he had the Eagles atop the list of potential teams, and it makes sense. You know, from a football standpoint, Deshaun Watson's great. He's a great player, and the Eagles have all these draft picks coming next year, so they have the ability to get a player like that if he's available, and it makes sense organizationally to do it. I agree with you. Like, they're going to look into it unless Jalen Hurst has an incredible season.
Yeah, I would – or a good season. Yeah, a very good season.
Sure.
I would agree with that.
Last question here is from Steve Barnes 72. Why don't you guys like Billy Joel? I've seen him twice in the UK and will hopefully be seeing him at Madison Square Garden in December. He's great live. I don't dislike Billy Joel. You dislike Billy Joel. I've actually seen Billy Joel live. I've seen him twice live. I've seen him by himself, and then I've seen him with Elton John. I'm a bigger Elton John fan.
Love Elton John.
Yeah, I'm a big Elton John fan. But Billy Joel's fine. You don't like Billy Joel.
Remember when Billie Jean King was in the green room back when we were doing Daily News Live or PST? And were you there that day? And
yeah,
somebody introduced me to her as this is Rube. He's a big music guy. And she started asking me about bands. She's like, give me two bands from Philadelphia that I should listen to. And I gave her RFA and Hop Along, two great Philly bands. And she goes, oh, okay, let me write these down. She writes them down in her little notebook. And she goes, I'm going to tell Elton about these too, and have him listen. And I was like, oh, you're friends with Elton Brand? I was going for the cheap laugh, but it was really cool. And she's like, so somewhere out there, maybe Elton John's listening. Cause I know Elton John is into really, you know, he loves new bands. I think does he do a serious show with plays new music on Sirius?
I'm not sure, but that's pretty cool. Okay. That she's like, I'll just tell Elton.
Yeah, she's like Elton. And I'm like, oh, you're friends with Elton Brand. but yeah, she was awesome. She was so nice. John Clark.
By the way, if I ever got knighted, I would make people call me Sir. Isn't he Sir Elton John?
I think he is.
I would make people call me Sir everywhere.
John Clark was in there. He's a big tennis guy, as you know.
Sir John Clark.
And they were, yes, Sir John Clark. They were, I think it's Captain John Clark, right? Actually, but they were going over ad court serves, and she's like, serving is all math. That's all it is. It's just math. And she's like diagramming stuff and ad court serves. But anyway, I love Elton John. And I mean, everything up through Yellow Brick Road is brilliant. My problem with Billy Joel is his lyrics. He's the worst lyricist. I think he's got a good knack for melody. I like playing his stuff on the piano. I won $100 in a talent show freshman year of college for playing a Billy Joel song called Root Beer Rag. I think it's from Street Life Serenade. I think he's got a great gift for melody, but he writes the worst lyrics I've ever heard in my life. Like, write out the lyrics to We Didn't Start the Fire sometime.
And I had to.
It's embarrassing.
Eighth grade social studies class, we had to write our own We Didn't Start the Fire with stuff that had happened during our lives, which at that point we're like 13. Not much had happened, you know.
There's the Evesham Township school district in action right there.
All right, let's finish up.
I will say the Stranger is a really good record. I like The Stranger.
Okay, yeah. So it's not all hate for Billy Joel.
Most of it is, though. The lyrics just suck.
Coca-Cola Wars, isn't that one of them?
And he hasn't written a good song in like 40 years. He's just a nostalgia act at this point. So I don't know.
Whatever. I was trying to leave you on a positive Billy Joel
note. I know you were, but I wasn't going to let it happen.
All right, we're running late here, but I can't put this off another podcast. We've said for two times we're going to do it. So let's go through and rank our positions. You want me to go first, or you want?
Yeah. How do you want to do this? You want to do our first, and then second, and then third?
Sure. Yeah. Let's start with number one, and we had some stipulations for this. One was that we're assuming health.
Unrealistic stipulations.
Yeah, unrealistic stipulations. We're assuming health because it's too tough to try to project who's going to get hurt. And the other thing is, this is the roster as it stands now. So everyone who is on the roster is on the roster, and there's no one else added. So at number one, want me to go or you say it?
You go ahead.
I had offensive line.
Same.
They're just good if they're healthy. You know, the starters are good. They have Landon Dickerson as a backup, and then their top backup tackles, either Mailata or Andre Dillard. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and again, the health thing is a question, but I mean, if they're healthy and you go Kelsey, Brandon Brooks, Lane Johnson from your 60% all pro right side of the O-line, and say Amalo's solid, and you know, we'll see what happens at left tackle, but either way, they're going to have a good option there. So I think healthy, this is a loaded offensive line, and I think they're going to be decent on offense if that O-line is intact.
Yeah. All right. How about number two?
I went D-line.
Me too. And this probably would make Howie really happy. This is what they want.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure anything we say can make Howie happy, but yeah. And I still think they're, you know, an edge rusher short. I'd like to see, you know, I've been saying this for 5 years, see Barnett take that next step. I'm bullish on Sweat. I think Sweat with increased reps will potentially be an 8 to 10 sack guy, double digit guy. Brandon's still playing hard. So they're really good. And I mean, they're loaded inside. You can make a case that they're number one. They're healthier than the O-line, so there's less question marks from there. But the two lines are definitely the strength of this team right now.
Yeah, and I mean, inside, you're right. Fletcher, Javon Hargrave, now Milton Williams, Hassan Ridgeway, even Marlon Tuipulotu. I almost nailed it. I just wanted to get there and nail it, and I didn't nail it. Third, who do you have? Or I'll go. I'll have tight end. And this is what if we just have the same list? That'd be boring. I have tight end because Zach Ertz is still here. I think this is going to drop if he gets traded. But for right now, I don't know how you wouldn't have them third. They have a guy, even if Zach Ertz isn't the same player, you have him and you have Dallas Goedert, who's a top 10 tight end.
Yeah. And even if Ertz is gone and we'll see who they bring in, whether it's Richard Rodgers or whoever, I think Goddard's really good. He's not Ertz good, but he's
different good though.
He's different. He's more down the field. His hands aren't as good. He'll drop more passes than Ertz. He doesn't run as good routes as Ertz, but he's an incredible blocker, and he's more of a weapon down the field. Than Zach Ertz. So I think he's a potential Pro Bowl player. You know, tight end is weird because I mean, like, you got O line, you're judging 10 guys. Tight end, a Pro Bowl type tight end can really help define that group. So that's why I have tight end so high. Even with Ertz not here, I'd probably still have him fourth.
Okay. All right. Now we're gonna hopefully deviate a little bit. Who do you have at number four?
I have running backs.
Okay, we're different. I have receivers.
Yeah. I have receivers fifth. I went running back, receiver.
And on the opposite, I have receiver, running back.
Okay.
At four or five.
Well, why did you put receivers ahead of running backs?
Well, first off, you have Devontae Smith, who first-round pick, I think is going to be very good, top 10 pick. And I think I'm higher on Rager than a lot of people. I see the talent is there, and I think that having the pressure off of him is really going to help. Having a head coach and a play caller who understands how to use him better will certainly help. And then after that, like, I think they have some unknowns. The one known is Greg Ward, who's solid. After that, I'm bullish on Quez. And I think if you get something out of Fulgham or Hightower or even J-Jaw, all of a sudden that's not a bad receiver room.
Yeah, I agree. There is potential there. I ranked running back. I actually had receivers ahead of running backs, and I flip-flopped them just because Miles is a known quantity. I think Devontae is going to be really, really good, but Miles is a known quantity. Boston is a solid number two or number three, whatever, wherever he ends up. And I think between Kerryon and Jordan Howard, you have a chance to have a pretty good room there. So there's kind of proven talent there. You can certainly make a case for wide receiver. I'm excited about their wide receivers. I haven't said that in a long time, but I really want to see this group. It's so hard to evaluate anybody from last year. It was just such a train wreck, coaching, O-line, quarterback play, play calling. Every facet of it was really, really made it hard to judge a Rager or a Fulgham or any of those guys. So I'm excited about those guys, but I just think that Miles being such a known quantity, I think he's one of the better young running backs in the league. Devontae so far is just his potential, and it's a ton of it. But that got me to put running backs just ahead of wide receiver.
I get it. All right, let's go to six. I have quarterback.
Same.
Oh man, we are thinking too similarly here. It was tough to put quarterback somewhere because I don't really know what Jalen Hurts is. I think he's good. I think he's like maybe above average. And Joe Flacco is at least experienced. I don't know. It was tough to put quarterback somewhere.
Yeah, it was. I think Jalen's going to be pretty good. I do. But who knows? I could easily be wrong. He could be great. He could be terrible. It's a really wide swath of potential there. But I think that's kind of I could have put linebacker ahead of Hurts or ahead of quarterback. But I think Flacco's a solid backup, so that kind of elevated it. But I have quarterback six. And then I leave linebacker and DB, which I'm sure we have in the same order.
I can't believe how similar we are here. I'm guessing seven linebacker, eight defensive backs.
Yeah. Yeah, DB. I mean, DB by default, the first thing I did was I put DB last when I made my list and then worked from there because I think they've upgraded linebacker. They signed a guy. You know, they drafted guys who could play some linebacker. And I think just Singleton is solid. He's just a solid guy. And TJ Edwards has started some games. He has some strengths. And I'm excited to see Davion Taylor, see what he can do in year two. Never played last year, which bothered me. I wanted to see him. You know, the whole thing about him was he hasn't played. He needs experience. He needs reps. And then he didn't get it. He got 32 snaps all year. So
you talked about the preseason. If there was any guy who missed the preseason last year, was that guy.
Yeah, seriously. He barely played in high school. He played JUCO and then 2 years of Colorado. He's fast. He's athletic. He's explosive. He's got great traits, but he just needs playing time. So we'll see how it all fits together. But I think that position group is not an embarrassment at this point. I don't think it's very good, but potentially okay.
Yeah. And then defensive backs, they have a few good players. I mean, Darius Slay is a very good player. Rodney, when he's healthy, is a good player. Which, hey, we said healthy, so Rodney's a good player. Anthony Harris is a solid player, a good pickup. And that's it.
Yeah, that's it. And I thought Slay played well last year, but 30-year-old cornerbacks, you never know at what point they're going to start going downhill.
Yeah, he played well last year. I don't know. Some people think he didn't play well. He played well. I don't think he played up to his level. I don't think he was like an elite corner. And I think that's what they brought him here to be. But I thought he played well.
Yeah. Yeah, I give him a B.
I think he'd probably give himself a B.
He might give himself a C.
Maybe. I mean, like the games, he had tough matchups against premier corners, which on one hand is like, yeah, that's of course he had. But on the other hand, it's like, you're allowed to win too. And I think he would admit that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that secondary is scary right now. We'll see what they do. We'll see how the rookie contributes. Well, a couple rookies. But McPherson's the guy who kind of can really help bring this grade up a little bit, but Rodney's health, but it's a scary situation, that secondary, no doubt.
Cool. All right. If you enjoy the Eagle Eye podcast, please do us a favor, rate and subscribe wherever you get your pods.
Next time we rank something, let's make sure we're different. Sorry, Dave.
I thought you were going to let me get through it.
No.
It didn't happen. If you're watching on YouTube, please click the like and subscribe button.
Thanks, Jacoby Stevens, too. There.
Yeah, thank you to Jacoby Stevens. That was awesome hearing from him. We wish him well. Yeah, that was a fun interview. I really enjoyed that. All right, we will be back with you guys on Wednesday night. It'll be late, but we'll go through the schedule. And once, and Rube said it earlier, once the schedule's here, season's not that far behind. So for Rube, I'm Dave. This has been Eagle Eye. We'll talk to you soon.